Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, cultural enrichment, and all-inclusive fares. Discover more at Viking.com.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Joe Biden and Donald Trump square off in Iowa over tariffs and presidential character, among other things. What are we learning from that showdown about the shape of the 2020 presidential campaign? Welcome, I'm Paul Gigot with the Wall Street Journal. Here to talk about the Biden-Trump scrum is my colleague Kim Strassel. How are you, Kim?
Hey, Paul.
And Kyle Peterson. Hello, Kyle.
Hello, hello.
All right. So I was struck by the exchange, particularly by Joe Biden's comments, because I thought the remarks, because they were very well laid out in speech form, very well considered, and I think they gave an insight into his campaign strategy in a couple of different ways that I want to explore. Now, one in particular I want to make, talk about, and I have to say we're here with a colleague from Fargo, okay, Kyle Peterson. That's where he grew up, went to school in Iowa, Iowa State. Knows the part of the country well. And what was fascinating to me, Kyle, was to see Biden go after the Trump policy on tariffs so vigorously. I mean, he really laced into him. And he basically said, these tariffs are hurting you, farmers, and the president is wrong when he says China is paying for them. We know you're paying for them. We know he's doesn't seem to care about your suffering of small manufacturers and farmers who are being hurt by the tariffs. He's teeing up, if he follows through on this, trade policy as being a major attack line against Donald Trump.
Yeah, and the question is whether that will be enough to turn Trump voters, moderate Trump voters, away from the president. I mean, this is a line of attack that Democrats made throughout the 2018 elections, and for the most part, it didn't work. I mean, I did some reporting on the North Dakota Senate race between the incumbent Heidi Heitkamp and the challenger Kevin Cramer, who ended up winning that race, and Heidi Heitkamp was constantly hitting this, that tariffs are bad for farmers, tariffs are hurting us, and she lost in a pretty big landslide. So the question that I keep asking friends back home is, is this going to be the straw that breaks the camel's back? I mean, farmers are hurting right now, and the question is just what will make them defect? People keep telling me that they don't know either. I had a friend tell me recently that, you know, there may be some people who are checking their options, but it may depend on what the alternative to Trump is. If it's Bernie Sanders, that'll be a harder lift than if it's Joe Biden or maybe somebody more centrist.
Bernie Sanders agrees with Trump on tariffs, as far as I can tell. So it'll be very hard for him to make that distinction. The point I would make, though, about Kevin Cramer versus in that Senate race versus Heidi Heitkamp is that North Dakota is a more conservative state than Iowa is. It's never in play in the presidential race. Trump's going to win North Dakota or else he's going to lose every state, except maybe Alabama. So, but in Iowa, it's a much more swing state. And, of course, Joni Ernst is also up for election this year, the senator from Iowa who's been critical of the tariffs. And I wonder, Kim, if this is a way of Trump, of Biden's, you know, basically not just teeing up the farmers in the Farm Belt, but also trying to peel away some business support for Trump in Iowa, but maybe nationwide if he tees up tariffs as an issue.
Oh, it's an attempt to peel away all kinds of people. In fact, as I was listening to that speech yesterday, I almost laughed out loud because it appeared that Biden had a list of blue-collar workers, and he was ticking every category as he went by. He talked about construction workers and electricians and plumbers and manufacturers. By the way, just as an aside, can I just say that it's good to see Joe Biden accepting the idea that tariffs are a bad thing and, in fact, are costly for consumers. This is not, as you mentioned, Bernie Sanders, the position that many Democrats have. So there's some progress going on here, if only for political reasons. But yeah, he's going to embrace this, and it's very clear what he's attempting to do. He's attempting to steal the Trump soft mantle of populism that was so successful for the president last time around, to say, look, I feel your pain. He had this one line in his speech. I can just imagine the farmers staring at their ceiling, wondering how they're going to pay their bills the next day. You know, this is the folks that he wants to identify with. In states like Iowa, where it's really much more of a toss-up, peeling away that support could make all the difference.
Well, a couple of thoughts on that. I mean, there's been an assumption since Trump won the election in 2016 by a lot of Republicans that trade policy, hawkish trade policy, protectionism is now popular politically, that it's a winner politically. Trump certainly seems to think so, often talks like it is. He said, the farmers love me. The steel workers love me. It's very popular to be tough on trade, to be seen tough on China. And yet he does that when he says that, that's at a kind of a conceptual level, right? Everybody wants, I'm for the American worker. But then what Biden is doing is focusing on the costs. By hitting the tariffs, he's saying, this isn't a free lunch. Look at what happens. This is what it means to you, and this is how it is affecting you. And of course, when you're just talking theoretically about, Smoot-Hawley tariff could happen again, and it'll hurt you, that's not tangible. But when you're talking now in the Farm Belt after, I guess we're almost approaching a year and a half of tariffs in effect, they feel that tangible cost. And that's what Biden seems to be betting on. So this could be a test case of whether or not tariffs are actually good policy.
That's true, though. To try to make a little more clear what I was trying to say earlier, one of the issues here is that the parties and the politicians have become so polarized that these farmers, yes, they are against tariffs generally, but they also are generally socially conservative. They're probably pro-life. Don't forget that Joe Biden last week came out in favor of taxpayer funding for abortions, and so all of this stuff is wrapped up. It's not as if Joe Biden he's trying to isolate the tariff issue here, but what he's also asking farmers, socially conservative, rural voters to do is forget those parts of his agenda. But just to bring up another thing, one of the things that I think is so canny about his strategy here is Biden is also trying to shore up support from the Democratic base, progressives, the left. I mean, his real rivals in this nomination contest so far are Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. He needs to find a way to peel off those voters, and he has two real options to do that. One is that he can move himself to the left policy-wise. He's done a little bit of that with his climate change plan, talking about phasing out gas cars, building a new high-speed transcontinental railroad over, there's no time frame for those given.
You love that transcontinental bullet train, don't you?
I do. They can't even build the one in Florida or in California, but we're going to build one all the way across the country. But the problem, if he moves to the left on the policy issues, he's going to worry about some of these moderate voters that are supporting him. So what he's trying to do instead is he's just going straight after the president, which is a way that he can reassure some of those progressives without losing any of the moderates. I mean, don't forget that Biden picked this fight. This isn't as if he and Trump just happened to be giving speeches talking about each other. I mean, he sent out prepared remarks at 6 a.m. to reporters trying to make this the story of the day, and he succeeded in that.
Well, I do want to talk about that, the direct attack on Trump on character, and I think that's an important point, Kim. But just one more final point on tariffs, and that is that when I've talked to the people, senators and people who represent the Farm Belt and some of the business groups out there, one thing they've been saying over the last, particularly in 2018, was, look, we don't like these tariffs. They're hurting us, but we'll forbear here because the president is saying this is in service of a larger cause, which is getting China to behave better. This is in service of a larger cause to get the U.S.-Mexico-Canada free trade agreement through. So the question is, what's the patience? How long will people in that part of the country endure this pain? Or will they begin to say, "Well, you told us there was a deal, Mr. President. Where's the deal at the end of come the election in 2020, Kim?"
Right, and especially you know, I remember last summer, because this has been going on a long time now, talking to some people out in a farm area in California who were saying that the other thing that a lot of these constituents had been attempting to do was engage in workarounds on the assumption that this would be short-term pain. So, for instance, California farmers were exporting some of their things to other countries rather than to China for a time. It's not as good a market, but it was some place to put their products. But again, this was last summer that that debate was going on. This has been happening for a very long time now. And at some point, I do agree with you. When are we going to get that U.S.-Mexico trade deal? When is China going to come to the table? And I think that if that's not done here in the next few months, it's not just enormously destabilizing to the economy, but Trump does come under risk of losing core support.
All right. We're talking about Joe Biden versus Donald Trump in Iowa, and you're listening to Potomac Watch from The Wall Street Journal.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. I'm Paul Gigo with Kim Strassel and Kyle Peterson, and we're talking about Joe Biden versus Donald Trump in Iowa. And let's turn to what I think, Kyle, you referred to before, which is a startling personal nature of the attack on Donald Trump. Much of this speech that he delivered, these prepared remarks, as you said, went out 6 a.m. to the press corps. So he wanted people to pay attention to this, and he wanted people to pay attention to the strategy. He mentions Trump 76 times by name in the speech. So this is a direct assault on Trump. I was struck by the very personal nature of it, which is, if I may use that, the word Trumpian. And Donald Trump does that and called Joe Sleepy Joe, basically says he's a low IQ individual. And Biden gave it right back to him, saying, Kim, that basically this is this president is an existential threat to the country, that he has abandoned honesty, decency, and treating everyone with dignity. He's demonizing people and really going through a long litany of every Donald Trump insult over the last 2.5 years.
Yeah, in particular, he laid out what he said were three, quote, fundamental threats that Donald Trump posed to our country. One was that he was a threat to our core values, and he really got rough in that section. He rolled out the entire, put Donald Trump in the same category as white supremacists and neo-Nazis and anti-Semites. Which is these days a favorite claim of the left. He said that it was a threat to our standing in the world, that our allies cannot respect us, do not respect us when Donald Trump speaks for the country. And third, that he is putting our democracy at risk, tearing down the guardrails of our democracy, undermining Congress, undermining the courts. It was really rough stuff. And it signals, much as we have known from day one when Biden announced his candidacy, that he intends to make this race largely about Trump. He's going to have to issue some policies, which he has done lately. We talked last week about his new climate deal, and he referenced that in his speech. And the progressives will demand that he move more to the left on some of those policies. But Joe Biden's calculation is that if he can make this about Trump, it's his best shot of threading the needle between his progressive and more moderate bases, because the one thing they have in common is they really dislike this president.
And Kyle, if that calculation is no doubt based in part upon all the polls that are showing him beating Donald Trump in all of these key states. Right now, it's just about all of them by double digits. So if I think he concludes that he believes that if he can get through to the nomination, then he has an excellent chance of beating Trump based on that head-to-head character comparison and the fact that Biden is unlikely to be as threatening and have the character baggage that Hillary Clinton did.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, one of the lines that stuck out to me in the Biden remarks were he's going after Trump for tweeting, picking petty fights with, you know, celebrities. And Biden says he found time to go after Bette Midler, for God's sakes, in the middle of the D-Day ceremonies. I mean, I think that's something that even a lot of the president's supporters would have some sympathy for. If you look at the polling, there are a large numbers of people who say, you know, I like his policies. I wish he would stop tweeting. And so I think Biden is savvy to go after that. I mean, there's a couple dangers here in the strategy. I think though, one of them is that the other candidates then will be pushed to go farther, to go after Trump more to lock down that base. I mean, Kamala Harris told NPR today that if she were elected president, that her Department of Justice would start going after Trump for obstruction of justice. I mean, that may be a little bit more interesting to some of those progressive voters.
Welcome to Argentina.
Right.
Let's go after the outgoing government and throw them in jail.
And the second is that the lower Trump's approval ratings fall, the more progressives may feel like they have another option. I mean, one of Biden's chief arguments is that he's the guy that can beat Trump. But if you look at a Quinnipiac poll today, he's beating Trump by the most, 13% in head-to-head matchups. But Bernie's beating Trump by 9, Kamala's beating Trump by 8, Warren's beating Trump by 7, Buttigieg and Booker are both beating Trump by 5. I mean, it's way early, and you know, polls can go a lot of different directions. But if you're a progressive voter and you're thinking, I really want to beat Trump, you may start thinking that you have other options than Biden. You might start thinking, well, if Bernie or Warren can beat Trump, maybe I'd rather have her in the White House.
The other interesting sub-theme in the Biden remarks, Kim, I thought were this idea that Biden can work with other Republicans. And once the Trump fever passes the GOP, they'll kind of come back to earth, as he would like to say, and be able to work with a Democratic president like Biden, particularly one who will be willing to reach across the aisle. This is not a universal view within the Democratic Party. And I just want to quote for you both Tim Kaine, the Democratic senator from Virginia, who was the VP candidate for the Democrats in 2016. Said, quote, I don't think they're suddenly, he means Republicans, suddenly going to decide, okay, we're a minority party now, we're just going to be the loyal opposition. He thinks that they're going to oppose everything that Biden would stand for. And there's this piece in the Huffington Post, which of course is a left-wing publication, which quotes a lot of Democrats sneering at this idea that Biden has. Is this a potential danger for Biden, Kim, that he may, that some of his competitors in the Democratic primary may say to the voters, Joe's just too nice a guy here. With Trump, you got to be meaner.
Well, this goes back to that threading of the needle that I mentioned, is that, yeah, there are going to be members and partisans in his progressive wing that do not want him to suggest that he would ever work with a Republican ever. But at the same time, Biden put that in there deliberately because it's a nod to the fact that there are many Americans, in particular independent voters, of which there are many, and they are very influential in elections and especially in swing states, who like to hear themes of bipartisanship. And remember that Joe Biden watched this work very successfully, at least in the first go round, when Barack Obama gave all of those soaring speeches about the need to, you know, bring together blue and red America. Now, he never did any of that when he was in office, but it sounded good to a lot of voters. And so he's going to try to, I think, quietly, subtly make the same claim. We'll see when they get on that debate stage how much of an issue his compatriots make of it.
And the other point, question, of course, was Trump in Iowa. He had a rally and he played up his aid to farmers that he has used to offset some of the costs of tariffs. Also, his recent decision to egregious decision, in my view, to allow ethanol 15 in the summer months, which is a real sop to the corn growers and the ethanol. I know you're even less, you even like that less than I do,
Kim. I hate ethanol.
And the subsidy, growing the subsidy, and Trump's, of course, saying, no other president did this for you. Well, that's true because it's a bad idea. But he was touting what he's done for farmers, touting what he's done for Iowa, but also lacerating Biden in personal terms as a low IQ person. He calls it the Biden-Obama economy now. He's reversed Obama and Biden. Now it's Biden and Obama economy and other policies. So this is going to be, I think, maybe a replay of the 1800 election between Adams and Jefferson. I guess this is just going to be the start, Kim. Well, there's a long way to go, obviously. But I thought this was, in some ways, this week was the symbolic start of the campaign. If certainly, if Joe Biden's the nominee, they've started to square off in intensely personal terms. You agree with that?
Absolutely. And, you know, by the way, things, we've still got a long way to go. I just want to point that out.
Sure.
But I, you know, and I think things are going to dramatically change after we have these debates in a couple of weeks, just in terms of who's up and who's down and support. And I truly believe that at some point, you know, this field is going to winnow, and it's likely going to come down to a head-to-head between two people, and we'll see if Joe Biden comes out on top. But if he is the ultimate front runner, you bet this was an early microcosm of the ugly that we are going to have over the next 18 months. I honestly think that Trump tends to be fairly frank about things like this, in that I don't think he does a lot of filtering, but you can explain why you think that's not true.
Well, I think he wants to run against the hard left, Bernie or as he calls her, crazy Liz, I think, Elizabeth Warren. I think he wants to run against a left-wing candidate.
I think his advisors definitely don't want to run against Biden, but what Trump thinks from moment to moment, day to day, I mean, who knows? And keep in mind, too, that he can change the parameters of this debate. If he thinks he's starting to lose farmer support, well, you know, suddenly China may be coming around on a trade deal.
True enough. All right. Thank you, Kyle. Thanks, Kim. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back later in the week with another edition of Potomac Watch.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.